I'm slightly biased, obviously, but I think that that should be close to 100% of people using AI in some form or other. That isn't me saying it because I think you have to use AI so that you can say, I use AI in my role, because ultimately that's pointless. You should only use something if it actually has a purpose and delivers some sort of value to you. I think AI tools deliver value to every CSM in an element of their work.
Hey, Adam, thank you so much for joining me on the CS School podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Grace. Yeah, good to be here. Very well, thank you.
Brilliant. I'm so glad to have you on because we're going to be talking all about AI in customer success. And if anyone's listening thinking, surely everyone's talked about this, you're wrong. You haven't listened to this conversation. And there's a bit of a paradox, obviously. AI is everywhere. You know, it's reshaping how we think, we write, we work. But obviously in customer success, you know, I think we need to dig into a little bit more about what that actually means, beyond just the LinkedIn, I don't know, the scaries that are put out there and, you know, making people think their jobs are going to be taken. So let's just, yeah, we want to kind of just get into that really. But really adoption is kind of, I think, perhaps slower than you might expect, which is something we're going to get into in a little bit. But yeah, so kind of, I think this episode would be really interesting to hear what's holding people back and how can CSMs properly use it, and you know, the ways they are currently using it, and the, you know, the future ways that it can be harnessed. So I think to unpack that, let me introduce you first of all. So today I'm joined by Adam Parsons. He's a client success director at Decreed, and yeah, is a leader in the CS space and someone really kind of at the forefront of kind of integrating AI into customer success. I'm really, really excited to have you on, Adam. So would you like to introduce yourself a bit about how you got into customer success and what drew you to the AI side of customer success as well?
Yeah, no problem at all. I think my career history has been partially the constant pursuit of stuff that I find interesting at kind of every stage. So I originally started out my career years ago working in recruitment. So I was actually a recruitment consultant for 5 years. Oh. And I got to the point where I figured out that I actually hated sales, but quite liked dealing with clients. So I started looking for jobs that was part of. I didn't know that customer success was even a thing at that stage, but I ended up working for an e-learning vendor as a client success manager. So at that point, I was looking after 30 to 40 clients that were kind of learning platform implementations, corporations, and really working with them on how they were using the platform, whether they were getting the most out of it, etc. Spent a while in that company, ended up leading the team, moved into product development for a while because I became aware that client success often work quite closely with product. And so mm-hmm. I thought, seems interesting. It also seems like even if it's not interesting long term, it would be good for me to understand it. So I then spent a few years leading a product team for another ed tech company. So working with instructional designers, learning technologists, that kind of thing, and leading them as we rolled out across UK universities. Then moved into Decreed, as you said earlier. So now in a client success director role, looking after a small portfolio of sort of very large corporations, generally sort of global multi-billion dollar organizations, supporting the Decreed product suite for them.
Brilliant. Sounds like you had a hand in it all, really. And I think, was there kind of a particular sort of turning point for you that I don't know, was it in the last few years or was it before that, where the value of AI and the potential for customer success and wider, obviously, we're talking about, you're touching on product development as well, that it kind of really clicked for you?
Yeah, it was relatively soon after ChatGPT became kind of mainstream back in 2022. I started using it just out of interest. Like I said, I'm kind of constantly attracted by shiny new things. And I thought, this is something that's new. This seems like it's going to be pretty big. You know, I'll start figuring out what I can do with it. And then, you know, that very quickly became, okay, this is a major thing that every person in every modern job is going to be impacted by. And this is before even, you know, Decreed or other organizations started sort of building out proprietary tools. We're just talking about the consumer tools that were out at that time. So looking at, like, this is going to impact what I'm doing, so I better get ahead of it. And I like to, where I can, try and kind of future-proof myself. So dug into it a little bit more in the sense that, you know, client success is the role that I'm doing at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's going to be changed by AI, as is almost every other role. So if I can figure that out now, figure out how I can use it, how I can embed it, and also not just how it becomes a tool that I use, but how it actually changes the nature of my role, then that will set me in good stead for the future.
Mm. So absolutely. So it's kind of a real sort of self-preservation thing, you know. I mean, that's how it's kind of how we're looking at it in marketing as well. So much of our roles are going to be automated at a certain point, kind of getting ahead of that. Is that am I right?
That's
part of it.
Yeah. I mean, the technology interests me just in general, okay. But it's part of it is preservation. I think preservation sometimes can sound a bit negative, like you're just trying to hold on to something that's dying. But I don't think that's the case in client success. I think it's something which is going to just change the nature of the role. So it'll go from being a task-based role to a insight-based, relationship-based, human skills-based role. I think that's how it will change.
Hmm. Is that the kind of thing that really kind of excites you about it, the sort of the potential to sort of...
Yeah, I think it basically frees up time to do more of the interesting part of the role, doesn't it? Like, I don't think anyone gets into client success because they really enjoy doing progress reports or QBR decks. I think they do it because they they want to actually see a difference in their clients' organizations. They want to be able to understand what the tangible impact they're making is on their clients' business and kind of being more consultative, being more strategy based, not just kind of a check-in every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. No, completely. Although I'm sure you will get we will get the odd person who does really enjoy creating.
Quite possibly, yeah. that's a different conversation, but I think you're right. It's something that I think has. You know, I've been thinking about it recently in terms of how CS engage with AI. It's not just about replacing tasks that we don't want to do. It is about understanding how it actually augments the role in itself. Mm. And like the requirements of the role become different rather than just replacing parts of the responsibilities.
Yeah, you sound like you've completely got the right idea about it. You're sort of trying to think a few steps ahead of it rather than just being like, what am I doing with it today?
Yeah, exactly.
How is it making my life easier today rather than thinking actually how will my role be in the next 5 years time? Well, it's quite hard to call that one actually because things
5 years is a long time in our industry.
Things are changing so rapidly. But yeah, I think that kind of like sort of talking about the individual level, because I don't know, a lot of like I said at the beginning, there's so much potential, but many CSMs, I think, well, lots of people in general, but a lot of CSMs aren't quite sure where to start because, you know, we've got our annual State of Customer Success report coming out soon. And I think it was something like, let me try and think about what the actual stat was. I wish I had prepared this, but it was about a third of CS professionals do use AI. That was in 2013, that was in 2023, sorry. And then I think in 2024, we saw a bit of an uptick. And then 2025, you expect what we're... two full years since, I don't know, ChatGPT, like we're talking about, you know, we've had a good two full years of generative AI. But I think only it's less than half of CSMs are actually using tools like this. And then I think I remember, you know, writing the report, looking at the data and looking at responses, I think these use cases really range wildly. Like you've got, sure, your content generation, and you've got some predictive analytics, but there seems to be quite a lot holding people back. And I don't know whether that's, if you're a frontline CSM, you know, you're not, you know, let's say you're a frontline CSM, you're not a data scientist. You are just trying to do your job better. What do you think CSMs should be reaching for first to sort of better use AI today and become more efficient, to understand what their customers actually want, you know, what we want?
Yeah, I mean, that statistic is slightly terrifying if that's accurate. Only 40% of people are using it right now. I wonder if some CSMs may actually be using AI without realizing it, now that it's built into all of our email clients and a lot of a lot of the CRM systems that CS use have AI built in. I wonder if it's that rather than them thinking, I don't sit on ChatGPT doing stuff day to day. But I mean, even so, I'm slightly biased, obviously, but I think that should be close to 100% of people using AI in some form or other. And I think it really needs to be not... That isn't me saying it because I think you have to use AI so that you can say, I use AI in my role, because ultimately that's pointless. You should only use something if it actually has a purpose and delivers some sort of value to you. But that said, I think AI... excuse me. I think AI tools deliver value to every CSM in an element of their work. There's even the, I mean, the most simple use case you could possibly get in AI is the content generation piece that you mentioned. So almost all email clients now have an AI generation element to them, so you can speed up the process of writing emails to clients. That's not to say that you should click generate email and then hit send, because as we all know, you can spot AI generated content a mile off, and it completely undermines the human nature of the CSM role that I was talking about just a minute ago. It basically just replaces you as a robot that the client's interacting with, which is not what you want at all.
Yeah, the copywriter in me as well, sorry, absolutely hates that.
There's
so many formulaic. It becomes just so formulaic. You can spot it a mile off if you're used to it anyway.
Yeah, 100%. But I think CSMs should be leaning into those where they need them, and there are use cases for those. There are some cases where, you know, if you're writing an email to a client that you know well, the AI generation's not going to help you because only you know that client, the AI doesn't. It's going to generate an email based on the content of the previous one or something like that. Whereas you're emailing a person that you know, forget about that and just write it yourself. It'll be quicker. Yeah. But I think when it comes to getting to know your clients, which is the thing you asked a second ago, there's all kinds of tools that you can use to collate information from across the web to really get to understand your client businesses. And I think that's, you know, if you're a CSM that's dealing with more than, say, 10 to 15 clients, you can't possibly retain all of the knowledge in your head of what's going on in all those client businesses day to day, especially if they're large clients that have new information happening on a day-to-day basis, you know, turnover in their teams, change in their strategies, etc. And so tools like ChatGPT, Perplexity, Google's Notebook LM, all of those sorts of tools can be used to collate all of that in a way that means you don't have to sit researching clients for hours on end. You know, you can be going into a call with a new stakeholder, you can run a deep research project on Perplexity to do a landscape review of your client's industry. You can get a report back with a list of, here are the things going on in your client's industry, here are the things that might impact the service or software that you provide to them, here are the talking points you should think about when you go into that call. And you've done it in 10 minutes, it just sets you up for a much more constructive call, because otherwise you go into, you know, these kind of new stakeholder intros and it's just a conversation about, oh, who are you, who am I, where have we worked before, what are our priorities? Whereas if you can go in and say, okay, I know that this new regulation is going to be impacting your supply chain at this point, which means that your teams that work in that area need to be upskilled within the next 2 weeks so that you don't lose money in this area, it becomes value add from day one, which, you know, builds you in a much better position as a CSM for those clients.
Absolutely. And I think what we're sort of touching on is like a question of perhaps AI literacy. Correct me if I'm wrong, from what you just said then, it sounds like research should really be how CSMs are kind of using AI. Would you say not? So, you know, you don't want to replace Google, for example.
No, I think you can replace Google. Okay. I think that's fine. We're starting to see articles and things coming out over the last few weeks, you know, Perplexity is increasingly coming up against Google as a better solution because you can do the search and then you can query the content of the search within the same tool. So I think research, I think news, and I think analysis are three key areas for CSM. So research, as I just mentioned, getting to understand what's going on, not just in your client's organization, but in their entire industry. A lot of organizations allocate CSM portfolios on an industry basis as well. So if you're having that type of research project, in many cases, it will then impact or be relevant to a lot of your clients if you work across a single vertical or a couple of verticals. I think analysis is quite good. For me personally, because all of the clients that I deal with generally are kind of publicly listed companies. They produce things like annual reports, earnings reports, ESG statements, all those sorts of things that they have to. What I generally do with those is I just download all of the PDFs, which are usually hundreds of pages long, stick them into Notebook LM, and then I can use the voice mode to have a conversation with Notebook LM and ask it for things that would be relevant based on my relationship with that client organization. And, you know, how can I take this point and bring it into a conversation about upskilling or workforce transformation that they might be going through, or what does this thing in the ESG report mean for how they do this particular part of their business in the next couple of years? So I find voice mode particularly useful there because it's a backward and forward conversation rather than just typing queries into a prompt.
That is genius. I mean, I'm quite late to the game on Notebook LM, but it is such a useful tool to catalogue a lot of different sources, and it doesn't tend to hallucinate in the same way I think ChatGPT does.
No, I mean Notebook LM is just processing other information. It's not really as much coming up with its own information. The really handy thing is, as well as putting your own sources in, so like I say with the annual reports, etc., you can actually just type in the keywords. So, you know, for me, I might type in the client's name, and then it will bring up open web sources based on its own search, and you can approve or decline those sources as well. So usually it'll come up with things like the company's website or their, you know, their Forbes or Bloomberg page or whatever might have happened for them, and you can include that into the sources it pulls from as well, which is very useful.
That is useful. I hope anyone listening has like got a pen. Well, I say pen and paper. That sounds so okay, but writing that down, because that is some seriously hot tips there. But so interesting, because I think we're just sort of talking about an individual basis. These tools are really empowering, but when we were chatting about this subject a few weeks ago and about, you know, what angle are we going to take for this episode? Because there's another side of it as well, like when actual companies build AI into the fabric of their organization.
Yeah.
Something we're trying to do as well at the Alliance, you know, part of Customer Success Collective. But when actual companies build it in and enable their employees to use it, that kind of takes things into a whole different sort of... takes into a whole entire stratosphere. So could you kind of talk to a little bit more about how companies, and particularly how CS orgs, can build this into their processes, you know, with internal tools or
Definitely. I mean, we're at Degreed, we're quite fortunate because we're a learning company. AI fits very nicely with learning, especially when it comes down to how you can personalize learning for individuals. So probably two examples. One is just ChatGPT. So we have a team who have built an internal tool on ChatGPT that has access to all of our knowledge center documentation, understands our product, our services, etc. And we can use that internally to do things like saying, I'm going into a meeting with client X. I know that this is their current business objective. Can you give me a feature map of everything within our product that could support this use case for that organization? So then I get a handy table out the back of that where it'll, you know, go through all of the kind of business uses, and it'll say, if you want to achieve this outcome, use this feature within our product suite. And I can use that as a talk track for a meeting with a client to say, you know, have you used this part of the system? Have you considered introducing this or doing this slightly differently? So again, it's about doing things that I could go through and prepare manually for, but doing that would probably take a day for one of those meetings, whereas using that internal GPT takes 5 minutes to get at least a framework that helps us to provide talking points for a conversation.
So interesting. And do you think, I mean, this is not something else we learned in our own report recently. Not literally trying to plug it. I just found it quite interesting. But there's like, I think it's like less than half of customer success teams we surveyed, less than half have a dedicated ops role, CS ops role. But do you think, well, what do you make of that in the sense that, do you think this opens the door to more custom AI tools being, you know, more widely managed? You know, if we're seeing, you know, year on year, we're seeing an increase in the ops function. Do you think there's a possibility to get that kind of sort of team-wide kind of use of AI internally?
Yeah, so interestingly, the tool that I was just talking about was actually not built by a CS ops person at our company at all.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was actually built by someone in sales who felt like it was a good idea and wanted to see if they could do it. And it turns out they could. So that was then rolled out fully. So I think to your question, yeah, if you've got a CS ops role in place, great, utilize them, get them to look into it. CS ops is going to be a key part of this. But if you haven't, that doesn't mean you can't look at these tools. I think it's about the curiosity. It's about spotting an opportunity to say, okay, this could be done in a better way, or this could be automated, or this could save X number of hours per person per week. Therefore, I'm going to find a way of doing it. You know, the tool that I mentioned, as I say, it's built in ChatGPT, so it's not, you know, it doesn't require specific loads of development input or anything like that. But if I were to put an estimate on it, it probably saves me 4 or 5 hours a week, you know, which is half a day I'm getting back of things that I would have otherwise been doing. You then scale that up to however many people you've got in your CS team. You can put a, you know, a pound sign or a dollar amount next to that, and it's pretty significant over a year.
Massive, absolutely. It just, I know you probably can't talk too much about it. It's quite, you know, imagine it's quite early days, but how long did it take to sort of build this kind of this your own custom product like that?
I mean, they were doing it in their spare time. And so I think it probably took a couple of weeks to kind of get it, you know, get everything together. There's obviously, you know, privacy considerations that have to be made if you're giving access to things like internal documentation. So it had to be a localized version to make sure that everything was still as secure as it needed to be. But, you know, the framework is there. OpenAI make it quite easy to build on their framework. So you can start, you know, with a few YouTube videos and tutorials building your own stuff out like that, beyond just, you know, the UI custom GPTs that you can build.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, it's just there's so much possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, kind of looking forward at, like, I don't know, the future of, you know, so at the moment, I think, research we've done and research I've seen, you know, on other sources, is like very few teams are automating. You expect the number to be higher. I think, you know, we recently found out something like less than 20%. But, you know, let's say that doubles. How do you think the CSM role evolves? Because it's a very unique role.
It is.
But how does it kind of remain that sort of special kind of human? I'm not trying to sound like I've got rose tinted glasses on the special human role, but, you know, it is very, it's a very unique role. How does that role change?
Yeah, I guess it's two parts. It goes back to what I was saying about, in the short term, AI will just replace tasks that people are doing with a quicker way of doing those tasks, or mean that they won't have to do it. So that just means that CSMs can get more stuff done. But I don't think that is the end state of AI within CS. I think that's just based on what you can do right now using consumer tools, or if you've got, you know, proprietary tools built into a CRM or things like that. It's just making the access to and analysis of data easier. Mm-hmm. So that for things like, you know, QBR decks, stuff like that, we will get to a point where you can create a QBR deck by clicking on generate deck, you know, and it will pull in all the data from your CRM, from your analytics software, whatever it is that you use internally. So that will go away. You know, you won't be spending hours doing that anymore. You know, life cycle emails, like you're coming up for renewal, you know, all those kind of standard milestone things can be fully automated now. So there's no reason someone needs to be doing any of that manually. The thing that I think will change as a result of that is that the CS role will become more consultative and more strategic. So it will end up focusing more on demonstrating to a client how they can meet their business objectives as a result of using whatever that solution is. So whether that's an isolated solution because it's a niche product, or whether it's a whole scale organizational transformation, it doesn't really matter. But it will become more about, as a CSM, how do I consult with the client to say, you know, basically, why did you buy from us? What are you trying to do? And how in a year's time are we going to demonstrate to you that you are closer to that goal than you are now? Because that's ultimately how you get renewals, how you reduce churn. You know, it's about keeping clients and expanding clients, right? So if you can get to a position of fully understanding the link between what they have now and where they're trying to get, you can look at what the gap is. You can also look at what the data is that will illustrate whether that gap is closing or not over time. And it might be, if I think about some of my clients, for example, they're running through broad scale learning programs, and when you first talk to them, they might say, okay, we want to make sure that people are upskilled in this area for the future. And you say, okay, well, why do you want to do that? Well, because the role is going to be changing, we think the nature of the industry is going to be changing. Okay, so how are you going to know if you've done that? Well, we're going to have more people that are upskilled, and we're going to have better succession planning, etc. Like, okay, so what does that mean for the business? Like, well, we need to reduce hires. We're going to reduce external hires. We're going to increase career mobility. Okay, what does that mean for the business? Right, it means it costs less to hire people because we're spending less on external costs. And then you start to get to, okay, right, so how do you put a dollar amount to that? So if you can reduce your external hiring by 10% as a result of using this, that's X million euros per year that you're saving. So now you can go back to your shareholders, stakeholders, whoever, and say, by implementing this solution, we're saving X million euros per year, as long as you can make that link. So that's where I think the CS role really starts to deliver value of helping clients see that journey, and helping them look at, you know, the bigger picture of the overall impact and the overall business change that they're bringing about.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, that sounds like something, it sounds like the ideal of CS at the moment, but are you, from what, obviously you are the expert here, that's not being properly realised at the moment, because people, I guess, being stuck in the weeds a bit too much with, you know, things that perhaps could be automated.
I think people are used to the way that they're working, and so they carry on doing it. I think also, to be honest, AI overwhelm, you know, that is a real thing. I subscribe to a couple of AI newsletters that I get daily, and every single day there are 7 or 8 major news stories about some big AI revelation. Like, that's a lot to keep track of. So I think if you're doing a role where you're not, you know, you don't have any kind of responsibility over AI solutions or things like that, it's very easy just to feel like you're behind, even after a week, you know. And so it then puts you off thinking, you know, I can't start anything because I don't know enough. Everything's moving too quickly. I'm going to get left behind. And you sort of get stuck in, you know, in your own head of just, I'll just carry on doing things the way I've always done them.
No, completely. And on that overwhelm, we've got a sister community called AI Accelerator Institute, AI. And my God, the constant developments that are my colleague Marissa, she's the content lead for that, and she's like, I cannot keep up. I'm not. It's so, I completely get that.
You don't need to keep up all the time either. Like, as someone working in CS, you don't need to know about everything that's happening in AI. You just need to know about the stuff that matters for your role, and I think to make it a little bit meta, you can actually use AI to help you with that. You know, you can set a task in ChatGPT or a task in Perplexity or something like that. And you can say, look, here's my role. You can even go as far as copy and paste. Here's my job description. Give me a daily digest of everything in AI that matters based on what I'm doing. Yeah. And you can personalize it to yourself. You don't need to know about, like, new developer tools that Google have released if you're not a developer. It's never going to be helpful. It's just going to be noise that distracts from the genuine value.
That's seriously smart. I think that's applicable for any role, though. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have a look at that as well. But I think also, just to draw back to what we're talking about, the sort of literacy and the sort of AI kind of overwhelm, do you reckon there's a small part of people that kind of have concerns over, I don't know, ethical concerns, maybe? Do you think that a little bit of that turns into it, or do you think, is that not something you've really experienced that much? Because obviously particularly if we're talking about, you know, internal built tools and stuff, or just the general, roles maybe being reduced, do you think there's a little bit of that, or is that just a bit scaremongering?
No, I think it's a genuine concern for people. I think you know, people don't want to think that they do a job that can be replaced, and I think that is a perfectly valid concern. And I think people can then say, you know, ethically, should organizations be pursuing replacement of staff via AI? That's not an answer I can, you know, give one way or other. I think everyone will have a different opinion. But I think for people in client success, it's about future-proofing yourself to say, not, I think my job's going to be replaced, but actually, how can I continue to add value? And also, what does value mean in the future where AI is everywhere compared to what it means now? Because now, delivering an effective QBR meeting might be valuable for some of my clients. In 5 years' time, I don't think that's going to be a thing. I think it will be completely different. And so the job for people in CS is to predict the future of what is going to be valuable to businesses based on how the nature of business is going to change over the next 5 years, and how do we make sure that we are able to continue delivering that value?
Oh, I completely agree. And yeah, touched on some really significant points there.
But I think on the overwhelm point, you know, I guess to sort of think about how do you get out of that, because you can get very stuck in that. I think just pick one problem to start with, of, you know, what do I find annoying in my role? What do I think sounds like it could be automated? You know, what's taking me longer than I think it should? And start really at just that hyper-local level. You don't need to think about how do I impact all of my clients using revolutionary AI. It's just, I find writing this weekly progress report annoying. Can I automate it using AI somewhere? Probably yes. Yeah. You know, it's about removing friction from the stuff that you're doing. Mm. And so I think, you know, at the most basic level, just think through, where do you allocate and where do you spend most of your time? Is it on things that are genuinely adding value to clients, or is it on process-based tasks? If you spend a lot of time on process-based tasks, those are probably the easiest to look at automating to start with. And you don't need to get hung up on looking for a particular tool up front or thinking, I ought to be using this solution. It's just about, what problem have I got to solve? And then go to, what are the options of how I can solve it?
Mm. I mean, Adam, you seem seriously switched on about this, about integrating AI more. But do you think, and obviously it's everyone's responsible for themselves, but do you, in your experience or conversations with peers, do you think enough people managers and team leads and leaders, CS leaders, are kind of enabling their team to do that? Like, no, you know, maybe some people, I mean, if people listen to this podcast, they'll know. But do you think sort of people managers and sort of leaders are kind of setting that standard at the moment? Or do you think there's still quite a lot of internal training to do, and managers might not know that they should be suggesting this to their staff?
I think where we are at the moment in the sort of, I don't know, AI revolution, AI takeover, whatever you want to call it, you know, the stage we're at the moment, I think everyone needs constant upskilling, because, like I say, it's changing so fast. If you have some internal training next month, that's going to be completely different. You know, there'll be new things that you can start doing. I mean, 2 months ago, the example that I gave with Notebook LM wasn't really anywhere near as good, and so I didn't do it as much. Now it is, because it's changed. So I think managers need to be thinking, firstly, from the perspective of, how do I develop my team to ensure that as their line manager, I have some level of responsibility for their career progression and their development. So I need to make sure that I'm giving them the tools that they need to flourish in their role and into the future. But secondly, just as a team lead, you have a responsibility to make sure that the clients in your overall portfolio are receiving the best level of service they can. And ultimately, that can be improved by using AI tools. So I think you have a responsibility to at least do the work up front to say, are there areas that can be improved? There might be. I've yet to find one, to be honest, but I'm happy to be proven wrong on it. But there might be some industries where CS teams will look at it and go, OK, there is genuinely no area of our role where AI can contribute or improve the service. And if that is honestly the case, then fair enough. Don't bother. But I don't think that is the case. I think there are always areas at the moment where, for CS professionals, there are things that can reduce the time you spend on stuff. There are things that can make understanding your role, understanding the data you're seeing, understanding the insights you're giving your clients easier and better for you to present to them.
Definitely. No, I completely agree. Such an interesting conversation. I think, sort of drawing to a close though, and sort of summarising everything and synthesising what we've spoken about, for somebody, I don't know, whether they're an entry-level CSM or perhaps they're at the sort of start of their AI journey. How do you think they should approach that? You know, and I think what's the thread throughout this conversation, it seems to be going into it with purpose as well as curiosity. I mean, it's good to be curious about these things, but I think, you know, it's getting to that point now where it does matter.
Yeah,
it's not going anywhere. It does matter how you integrate this and when and how. So, yeah, what's that kind of mindset shift people really kind of need to make? And yeah, what would your advice be for somebody?
I think to get started, step one is pick a problem that you want to solve. Don't try and just overhaul everything, or don't try and just bring in AI so that you can sound like you're on the cutting edge of something when actually you might end up solving nothing and introducing more complexity for no reason. You pick something that's actually going to be fixable. I think for individuals that are using consumer AI tools like, you know, Gemini, Copilot, ChatGPT, whatever they are, the mindset shift is to not treat it as just a really good search engine, treat it as a colleague. I can't remember the exact number, but it's something like AI has an IQ of around 150 at the moment, which is the equivalent of kind of a, you know, a very intelligent person. But that's an IQ of 150 in every single topic known to mankind. So it's an expert level in everything. So you can be having a conversation with it like you would a colleague. And if it says something you don't understand, or if you want to probe, or if you want to say, OK, but what does that mean for my role? You can say that. You're not just, it's not just a data exchange. It is a conversation that you can have. And then to your point as well, I think being intentional about it is important. You know, run those small experiments. If they don't improve what you were hoping they would improve, stop doing them. You know, kind of learn to fail quickly and replace with something else. Mm-hmm. If the initial problem that you were trying to solve doesn't get solved because the solution's not right, stop using it, pick a different problem. Or if the problem is the tool, you know, you can go back to researching that. But I think curiosity and intentionality have to go together there.
Yeah. Oh, completely agree. Very, very eloquently put. So I think there's so much to unpack here, and I think there's so much that I'm actually also going to take away and think about how I'm sort of, applying to my role as well, which is not CS for anyone who's listening, it's marketing. But yeah, really, really interesting conversation here, Adam. And thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to talk about this.
No problem.
I anticipate, we've probably barely scratched the surface here, but I anticipate listeners probably will have questions and perhaps will certainly want to follow up with you. Where is the best place for anybody to continue the conversation with you and, learn a bit more what you're doing, particularly within your teams as well, and what they can learn from you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn.com/ Adam L. Parsons. I also publish a newsletter there called Artificially Intelligent, which is about how CS teams can implement AI tools and how it impacts what we're doing day to day.
Brilliant. I'll link those in the show notes for when people can access it when the episode goes live. But yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. And yeah, thank you so much for being a fantastic guest and a seriously interesting conversation, something that's so important to today.
No problem. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out our other episodes and go to customersuccesscollective.com for even more customer success related content. You can also join our global community on Slack, and you can find the link to that on the CSC website. But until then, see you next time.